What's up, Goreheads? You know, I got an email the other day. Well, it was a couple weeks ago, and it was an anonymous email. I didn't really know what to think of it, but it, I don't know, it kind of struck a chord with me. I don't have any reason to think that it's real, and I went back and I checked the email address, and it wasn't linked to any Google accounts or anything like that. But they asked me to read it, and it's kind of long. I don't know, but it's a story. And again, I don't have anything or any reason to think that it's real, but they wanted me to read this. And they wanted to remain anonymous, obviously, because, like I said, it wasn't linked to any Google accounts or Apple accounts or anything like that. So I'm going to read this verbatim, and I don't know. Tell me what you guys think. It, like I said, it is kind of long, but here we go. I don't have much time available to me, so I apologize for any ramblings or errors. I hope I can finish. You know how they say you have one good friend for life? Well, I got lucky and had three. I never had many friends prior to this. Sure, I had acquaintances that I'd occasionally hang out with, but no real solid blood brother type friends. And I was an only child, so if I did hang out with anyone, it was usually at my house because I had the best toys or video games for the time and no little siblings to bug us, so that's cool, I suppose. We met when I was around 11 or 12. I was riding my bike and took a spill. I remember it vividly, because I had hit my head on the blacktop and busted it pretty good, knocking myself out cold. This is before most parents didn't feel the necessity to make you wear helmets and pads every time you so much as even stepped outside. Back then, just like the meme shows, finding your kids meant looking for the cluster of bikes in someone's front yard or by the woods, so I would have a very visible scar on my forehead from it too. You know how in cartoons, something bumps its head and it sees stars or birds or something like that? I swear that's how I felt, so as I'm trying to get the bike off me, struggle to my feet and come to my senses, I hear voices behind me. I've never seen someone knock the shit out of themselves so bad before. Holy crap, that was the raddest thing I've ever seen. So fucking awesome. When I finally managed to get up, I heard one yell something about how it looked like my head had been slapped by one of the other's mom's used maxi pad. Nasty, I know, but we were 12 at the time, so under the circumstances, it was proper etiquette to burn the others with a mom joke. So here I am, standing there with three other boys I've never met before, blood pouring down my head, listening to them burn each other. When the jokes finally died off, they introduced themselves as Sean, David, and Brian. I'd never seen them around the neighborhood or at school, so I just assumed they were new in the area and went with it. They walked me home, set my bike in the garage, and trailed me to the house. I told them I better just go in alone because Mom might spaz when she sees my head, and they didn't need to deal with that. Sure enough, I walked in and the shit hit the fan. The questions came one after another, bang, bang, bang. I explained exactly what happened, who found me and brought me home. She jumped into action, loaded me into the car and sped to the hospital. 11 stitches later and we were home. A night of rest and a day off of school was cool with me though. By the third day, I was ready to head back to school and join life again. I had a pretty good story to tell. Everyone about what happened, got a little sympathy being hurt, and a little teasing for being a klutz. I didn't see the guys that first day back, but I was busy getting caught up with schoolwork, so I didn't think much of it. Finally, the day after I met back up with them, we had a good time laughing about the crash and swapping other injury horror stories from the past. We went back to my house for some gaming and some jokes, BSing around. Life was good. We hung out nearly every day, stomped around the woods, played games, laughed, and talked. It was us against the world. It was great because in some small way, I had something common with each of them. Brian was the youngest of the three. His mom and dad were divorcing, and his dad kicked him and his mom out of the house when his new girlfriend moved in. They're renting a small house up the street from us and didn't really have a lot of money. They pretty much had to start over when they moved, so a lot of their stuff is hand-me-downs or donations from the local churches or women's groups. His clothes weren't the best, and his bike wasn't the coolest, but I thought it was kind of cool because he had a scar in the same spot as me. We liked a lot of the same stuff, it turns out, too. Even though he didn't have a lot of money, he was the nicest of the three. Sean was just kind of there. He was the follower. He did what the other two did and repeated most of what they said. Funny, though, when he did talk, he sounded very similar to me, except with a weird, kind of southernish accent. He never really did have an original thought of his own and seemed pretty content being that way. He wasn't the friendliest of guys, not rude really, but I think he stuck around because everyone else was taken or wouldn't take him anyway. His parents were the same way. They didn't really say or do anything. If they were around, they could usually be found in front of the TV, blindly staring at the screen. Ask a question, get a mumble in return. Now I see where he gets it. And now David. David was the troubled one. He came from an abusive home. His dad was an alcoholic, and his mom slept around on his dad, which made him drink more. He was always causing trouble in school and didn't really care what people thought. He didn't get good grades and never did homework. He was always wearing ratty clothes, and his hair was long and unkempt. Strange, though, his bike was the best of the three and the same type as mine, which was pretty sweet, and even though he was rough around the edges, he was just as good at stunting on his bike as I was. Probably got good trying to stay away from the house as much as possible. The way I figured, either one of his mom's one-night stands got the bike for him, or he stole it. Neither would surprise me. Having a group of friends, no matter who they are, that you call exclusive, they never mentioned any of the other friends and always just hung out with each other until they met me. We never went to their houses, mostly because of all the troubles they each had and the fact that I had the best stuff, which made it an easy decision. Well, that and the fact that I was the lone kid in the house. Between hanging out, getting and giving nasty jabs or mom jokes in, and screwing around in the woods, we had fun, and we were inseparable, but I'll take it. Seems the other thing about having a small group of exclusive friends is that you get a lot of looks. You know what I'm talking about, the you think you're better than us look, or the you're so damn annoying look. It didn't bother me. In fact, after a while, I really didn't even notice them anymore. What always seemed to catch my attention was the jeers and shitty remarks, though. Some of them sting a little, especially to a 12-year-old trying to figure out the middle stages of puberty. Kids calling us whatever rotten names they could think of because we were always by ourselves, making comments about stuff we did to distance ourselves or do to fit in with the rest of the popular kids, or didn't do to fit in with the rest of the popular kids. Personally, despite all the looks and comments, I enjoyed having a small group to hang out with. Of course, no group is official until it's named, so we dubbed ourselves simply the Outsiders after the book by the same name. We built a pretty cool tree fort out there in the woods near the houses. Had a pretty good stack of nudie mags, cards, darts, and snacks, drinks. There was enough room to spread out with sleeping bags, and we'd have campouts too. We'd catch bugs, frogs, snakes, and any other critters we could find, and usually keep them for a day or so, then let them go. Then something happened. It seemed innocent enough at first, I suppose. After all, it was only a couple frogs, snakes, and birds. This happened a couple times over the course of a few weeks. To most people, this really wouldn't seem too bad, just kids being kids. I mean, back then, when the world wasn't such a fucked up place, a bunch of kids playing in the woods and swamps, killing a few small animals really wouldn't have meant anything at all. But it was what they did with them after they were dead. This is where it gets rough. David was the first to start. He took the birds and cut them open, was playing with the guts. It grossed me out, and really I didn't want to be around it when it was going on, but I couldn't leave. These were my friends through thick and thin. The snakes got a similar treatment. He'd start peeling them, then whip them by the loose skin, and the meat and the bones would go flying out ahead. I'll spare any more details because I don't want to relive the memories, so let's just drop this subject. I've never told anyone about these things that I'd seen that summer. In fact, this is the first time I've ever said anything about them since then. I've had nightmares about those things, and honestly, it feels good to get this off my chest. Things were never really the same after that. We were still good friends and still hung out almost every day, but things just seemed off. We never talked about that summer until about 4 years ago later when Brian brought it up. He talked about it almost lovingly, mentioning the feel of the innards and the guts, how the blood felt on his fingers, how warm it was. David suggested we try again. I vehemently opposed and tried to change the subject to no avail. We went searching. No matter what I said, no matter what I did, I couldn't convince them to call it off. I was getting scared, but couldn't pull myself away. I tried to make myself leave, but I really couldn't. I couldn't leave. They dragged me along down the streets towards the woods. Once there, I tried to stay close enough to look involved, but far enough away to not actually be. As luck would have it, or fate, they weren't able to find anything worthy of their attention. We kept walking, though. David talked about what he'd really like to find. He wanted to raise the stakes and find something slightly bigger, something slightly more challenging. He wanted to feel the high of a bigger kill. We finally walked far enough to exit the woods clear on the opposite side. The next town over was just a half mile up. We'd already covered nearly two. As we pressed on, the fear began welling up in me more than ever, as I knew this wasn't going to be just a hunt for a squirrel, rabbit, or even dog. No, David wanted something bigger. He wanted to find something bigger. He wanted something human. Once the realization hit me, I bolted. I started running back the way we'd came, out of the woods. Damn it if I didn't make it more than 20 yards, though. I tripped on something and stumbled to the ground, and when I tried to get back up, the three were on me almost instantly. I flipped onto my back and saw them standing above me. Each one had fire in their eyes, and a look of hatred directed straight at me. I sincerely thought I would be the victim in their sick game. Sean was actually the first to speak, something shocking in its own right, as he rarely said anything that hasn't already said Ben once before. Listen, you little fucker. You're going to do this with us, or I'll cut your throat and rip your guts out through the hole. Not surprisingly, the other two were shocked that Sean actually made his own original sentence. It didn't take long for the shock to wear off, though. As soon as they came back to reality, the fire returned. They dragged me up to my feet and pushed me along the way to the next town. Once there, they forced me behind a row of trees so we could scout for the next prey. David kept a grip on me to ensure that I didn't make a run for it, and they warned me again not to make any noise, or they'd end this trip real quickly and painfully. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't run, couldn't yell, couldn't think straight. We waited there for nearly an hour, waited and watched. They picked out two potential victims. The first was a 20-something woman, small in stature and fair. She seemed plain, not too well off. There was no ring on her finger. The second was an older man, probably in his mid-50s. He seemed to be on the poor side as well. Not dressed all that well, and just kind of dull. Nothing really stood out about either of them except for the fact that they were both on the smaller side. Maybe only 5'6" each. I'm sure this was a deliberate choice, so whichever was the two picked, there wouldn't be a big scuffle to subdue them. Ultimately, they decided on the older man. I don't even think after all the bravado, they could bring themselves to kill a woman. Not that it matters much anyway, murder is murder. And I bet they're not just going to make it clean and easy. We hiked back to our town and finally arrived shortly after dark. I was warned. If I said or did anything to prevent the kill, I would be the next target. No questions asked, no excuses taken. They planned to go back in 2 days to find the old man and watch him some more. Then 2 days after that, they planned on doing the job when they knew my folks would be gone for the night at some wedding. That way we had a place to go afterwards. I didn't sleep that first night at all, and probably no more than an hour each night after that until the final day. I felt sick to my stomach, threw up a bunch, and couldn't eat much of anything at all. I didn't want to do this, but knew if I tried to back out, then I'd be the one that was killed. I just floated through school that day, and if I said anything at all, it wasn't more than 10 sentences. After school, we met near the woods again. They were all there, and David had a backpack on, and I didn't even want to think about what he had inside. This time, for the walk, they walked on either side of me and one behind to keep me from running off again. I was so scared. I could have easily thrown up 3 more times on the walk, but just choked it down and held on. We walked until we made it to the edge of the woods. We waited until dusk to emerge, and we walked into town. They already found out where the old man lived, so we traveled to his house and then waited until it was fully dark. When the time was right, we walked to the front door and rang the bell, then waited to strike. As soon as the door was opened, Sean and Brian pushed their way and grabbed the old man. David grabbed me and pulled me into the house behind them, then shut and locked the door behind us. They took the old man into a room upstairs where no one else could see what was going to happen. You are going to die today. There is nothing you can do to say or stop that from happening. Embrace your final time on this earth. A fucking speech. I couldn't handle it any longer and threw up in the corner of the room and fell over. My vision left me and I blacked out. When I woke up, David, Sean, and Brian were gone. This is your gore warning for this email. Because after this point, it gets rough. Really rough. Graphic warning. The old man was laying on the bed, still alive and breathing, or gasping rather in agony. He was covered in cuts and stab wounds. There was blood from one end of the room to the other, blood on the ceiling and walls. I noticed one of his ears was missing. His eyes had been gouged out. There was so much blood on the bed, it pooled around him and ran, dripping off the bed onto the floor. I saw his shirt was off and there was a foot-long gash in his gut. His stomach and intestines lay on top of his belly. How was he still alive? He started crying, or tried anyway. He was begging for mercy to end his pain and suffering. I left the room in search of the others, looked throughout the house, but couldn't find them anywhere inside. I went back upstairs to the bedroom to find the old man on the floor now. He was crawling towards the door looking for a way out. I had to end his life. I apologized to him and went back downstairs to find a knife or something to do it with. I found a bread knife and figured it would have to do. Back upstairs I went. I bent over him, told him sorry again, then jammed the blade into his chest as hard as I could, hoping to hit his heart. There was a sickening crack as I broke through whatever bones were in there. It took 3 tries to find his heart, and when I finally found it, I ended his life. I had to get out of there as soon as possible. I didn't know if anyone had seen us come in or heard any commotion from the murder. I ran out the front door and down the street. It was probably around 11 p.m., so the streets weren't busy at all. I did pass a homeless man and his dog, and I'm pretty sure they were sleeping, so I didn't think this was going to be an issue. I ran through the woods and didn't stop until I made it home. I went straight upstairs to the bathroom, ran in the shower, and got in clothes and all. I had to get all this blood off of me. As I stood there, the water beating down on me, I watched the blood run into the drain and felt sick and lost consciousness again. When I came to, the water was ice cold and still running on me. I shut it off, got out of the shower, and went to my room to find the three still standing there waiting for me. What the fuck, guys? Why did you just leave me there to kill him myself? What do you mean? When you passed out, we had to leave. It was really your fault it happened. We had nothing to do with it. It was at that time I heard the doorbell ring. My heart dropped and I got the chills. Somehow I knew this wouldn't be a pleasant visit from anyone at this hour. I went down anyway to answer the door. Sure enough, when I opened it, there were two detectives standing there. Then it dawned on me. Someone must have seen or heard us. That bum on the street could have seen me running past covered in blood and told someone what he saw. And shit, I left the knife in the old man's chest. I'm screwed on a level I'd never imagined I'd be. They asked if they could ask me some questions at the precinct, and seeing no alternative, I said yes. And only because I've watched TV law shows, I asked for a lawyer. They grilled me for a few hours. I denied everything. What I didn't know was that they had already lifted prints from the doorknob, walls, everything else, and the knife. There was no denying it was me who did it, and even with a lawyer present, there was no way I was getting out of this. They had me dead to rights. I was placed under arrest for the break-in and the murder of that old man. I spent the next 3 nights in a cell by myself, wondering and waiting. I was placed on suicide watch, and everything was taken from me. I wasn't even allowed to make a phone call. I didn't sleep the first 2 nights, and when I finally couldn't take the deprivation any longer, I passed out again. On that third night, when I did wake up, the guys were standing outside my cell waiting for me. "Hey man, how's it going in there? Thanks for not ratting us out." I asked them what choice I had. "You could have said something to anyone, and then we'd be in there with you. You know what would have happened, though? We'd have killed you from the inside." "What the fuck does that mean?" I said. "Kill me from the inside. You assholes left me there after you cut and stabbed him. You mutilated that man for no fucking reason other than to do it. Cut his eyes out, ripped his goddamn guts out. You fuckers are out there, and I'm stuck in here rotting." "You still haven't caught on yet, have you? You really don't get it, do you? Remember 4 years ago, when we first met, right after you busted your head riding the bike? We showed up right after you woke up. Ever wonder why people throw looks at you, call you a freak, and talk behind your back? We're inside of you. You wanted to be wanted. You wanted friends more than anything else, but instead you made us to be the internal enemy. You took a small part of yourself, mixed it with all the hatred you had for everyone outside, and created us. It wasn't really your fault, it just kind of happened. We are all in your head. You made us, unwillingly, unknowingly." I didn't know what to say. How do I get you out of my head, then? "There really is only one way, and I think you know what we're talking about. You've got to end your life, and there's only one way. I'm sorry, you have to end it, and there's only one way. End it now, or suffer until death. It's ultimately your decision, but either way, you lose." "What the fuck? It was me the whole time? You guys were so real, so visceral." "That's the idea. See you on the other side." 3 weeks later, when it was determined I wouldn't be a danger to myself, I was granted access to writing materials. As I finished writing this, I figured out how I'm going to end my suffering. I just don't know when. I'm sorry, and may God have mercy on my soul. So, yeah. Sorry for the mistakes and stuff, but I've read that a few times. And, yeah, that's pretty strong. Like I said before, I have no reason to think it's real. Because I, you know, researched it. I didn't give a place or name or anything like that. But I did research online and couldn't come up with anything that matched the description of this crime or anything like that. So I got to imagine it's just a story, but it's still pretty powerful. I don't know. So, yeah. That's this episode. Be on the lookout for more soon. We'll be around. So thank you, Goreheads, for listening. And, yeah, well, I'll talk to you all later.